Hi, everybody. It's Lou Kippelman, the producer of Breaking Kayfabe. I want to give a couple of notes at the top of the episode. First, as you're probably well aware, situations in real life nowadays are, let's just say, extremely fluid. And that includes the news Monday that WrestleMania will not be taking place at Raymond James Stadium in Tampa, but instead will be in an empty WWE Performance Center in Orlando. And, of course, that news didn't break until the day after we recorded this episode. My second note, you may notice that Jeff Baldrin's connection might be a little shaky at times. I do apologize for the audio quality, but you're going to find out why that is, and hopefully you'll be a little understanding of it. And now, without further ado, here's Breaking Kayfabe.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 128 of Breaking Kayfabe with Badger and Barry. Oh, hell, we break kayfabe on life and so many more things. With me, my man, Barry Rose. How you doing today, Bear?
I'm doing good, Jeff. It's, we're not going to be breaking kayfabe on this, but our nation is, the world is under a lockdown, and every 5 or 10 minutes, and you and I have been texting too, but every 5 or 10 minutes, there's something new. Ohio, just a few minutes ago, as we're recording this, Ohio has now ordered the closure at 9 p.m. tonight. We're recording this on Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock. All restaurants and bars will be closed. New Jersey is closing their schools for 4 weeks at this point. Disney World is closed. Everything has been canceled. But Jeff, one thing hasn't happened, and that's fucking WrestleMania has not been canceled. Everything else on the face of the earth has been canceled except for WrestleMania. But Jeff, we will get to that. I've told you how I'm doing, and I'm cranky. How are you doing?
Oh, here it goes, Mom. Well, folks, me shitting myself last week is not nearly as humorous this week as it was a week ago. Is that fair to say, Bear?
That's fair to say, yeah.
So here's what's going on in my life, folks. I had a CT scan done last week, and I went to my primary doctor, and my doctor delivered some rather unfortunate news to me. My doctor has informed me that I have lymphoma. And yes, as some of you were sitting there going, what? What the fuck? That's pretty much exactly what I said too. And kind of scary news, as you can imagine, Bear. Yeah, so I'm a little freaked out right now. And as we record, we like to promise that Breaking Kayfabe for 128 weeks now has come out on your listening choice or listening device of your choice. And I have to say that, unfortunately, I don't know how regular the show is going to be in the foreseeable future, because I don't know what the foreseeable future is. I have met with an oncologist, and we are recording this show from a hospital. I have been admitted to the hospital on Friday because the doctor was very concerned that I was dehydrated and looked even whiter than I normally am. So so he was concerned. And one thing, because of the stuff that Barry mentioned with the corona thing, is that he was worried that if I somehow got sick, that I would have a problem perhaps getting in through the emergency room. And, yes, here in Georgia, just like everywhere else, there are new cases popping up of the coronavirus. And so I've gotten in, and they have me on fluids, which is just super, super nice if you'd like to pee every 30 minutes like clockwork. And that's super fun. The first night I didn't get to sleep because one of the other things they do is they check your vitals literally a couple hours every night. So, you're finally drifting off to sleep, and then it's like, hello, I'm here to take your blood pressure and see what your blood sugar's like and do all this kind of stuff. And, I'll put in the perspective of blood sugar. My blood sugar, I am type 2 diabetes. And so I'm on different medications for it and stuff like that. And, when I take it on a daily basis, my blood sugar is like 140-ish, which is like not bad, but it's not like, LeBron probably has a better blood sugar than I do. I'll give him that. And so since I've checked in here, my blood sugar has consistently been in the 70s. So my blood sugar is cut in half. And my wife has very sarcastically said, you know, you had to contract cancer to get your blood sugar under control. So kind of scary shit, Bear.
Yeah, this is a fucked up start to a year, Jeff, on so many different levels. And I guess I'm a little, you know, this is not just a podcast with two idiots, but it's not just a podcast with two idiots communicating via Skype. We're friends and we've been friends for years. And over the last 3 or 4 years, we've become extremely close where we communicate literally on a daily basis. So it's very difficult for me thinking that my friend is suffering and is in the hospital with lymphoma. And it's been a very sobering and more so than even the coronavirus in a lot of ways, because you've always been healthy. I think as long as I've known you, there's never been a moment when I even recall you even, I'm sure you've had colds, but I don't even recall you ever getting sick. So this has been really, you know, just, I think emotionally for me as well, it's been very, very difficult. And I want to reiterate too what you just said a few minutes ago. We don't know where any of this is going to go. Obviously, the biggest priority is getting Jeff healthy, conquering this, and kicking its ass. And that's got to be literally priorities 1 through 1,000,000 at this point. And everything else will come right after that. So we don't know if we're going to be recording. And my assumption is there'll be another show. We don't know, you know, if Jeff feels good, we're there. And I told Jeff, contact me, and you know, and if we can make this happen within an hour or 5 hours, if I can get in front of a computer, we absolutely will, so we can continue this. You know, I got to say also that this is Breaking Kayfabe with Baldrin and Barry, and it's not something that I would ever do without you. You know, if I had to do a fill-in show, maybe me and Sweet Lou filling in, but my goal, I got to say, you know, look, if you're not feeling well, we're not doing a show. You know, at the end of the day, this is the collaboration is between us. This is us. This is our friendship basically put out there for a lot of people. So I know, Jeff, that, you know, I'm thinking of you multiple times per day, not just sexually like I usually do, Jeff.
Well, you know, maybe that's in the past.
That's in the temporarily it's on hold. But I'm thinking
once I get better, the sales of hand cream go way up.
So. And the good news, I've got enough toilet paper where I can cover the mess.
Oh, you're a hoarder, huh? Okay.
I'm a hoarder. The world could end today, Jeff.
So pretty soon, if I recover, what we're going to hear is Jennifer knocking on the bathroom door going, honey, are you okay? I'll be out in a second. I'm almost done.
So. Yeah, exactly. It is. But I know that, you know, all kidding aside, look, we got to throw the humor into this because it's essentially who we are. But at the end of the day, this is, I don't know. I guess I'm speechless for maybe the first time ever in my life because I guess this caught me out of left field like it caught you and your family. And I know that I speak for everybody, and that's what I'm going to do. I am going to speak for everybody, and that we love you. We are in your corner as you fight this. And whatever you need, you know, whether it's emotional support, whether it's something physical, whatever it is, not only am I there, not only is Sweet Lou there, but you have got the brothership clearly in your corner behind you. And I know I look for a place, and whether it's 3 months, 6 months, or a year, where there is no discussion of lymphoma or anything like that, and we are back to recording on a daily basis, because I know, Jeff, I know that you are going to stump a fucking mud hole in this bitch.
You mean stomp?
Stomp, whatever it is, you are going to tear this shit up. So, yeah, I love you. The brothership loves you. Sweet Lou, you love Jeff. I know you do. You can admit it.
Well, that goes without saying.
Sweet, sweet, sultry voice. the Barry White of producers.
Exactly.
So just to appreciate those thoughts from both of you. Just to finish out with a couple of thoughts. So I'm in the hospital right now for the dehydration. I'm supposed to be getting a biopsy Monday, Tuesday at the latest, hopefully. And then the plans are to release me until I can meet with my oncologist again to get the results. And then I will know much more of the, you know, about the future. And unfortunately, this is also I can tell you when this week's Ron Fuller Studcast, which I absolutely love doing that show, 90% chance that I will not be the co-host this week, that there'll be some guy, some of you have heard of, I don't know. I can't remember his last name though. Did you see what I did there, Barry?
I see what you did there.
Remember his last name. Yeah. So, and then I'll probably know more. Again, as of right now, I absolutely, along with Barry, do not have any plans to stop the podcast. The reason I brought all this up is there may, you know, occasionally instead of Tuesday, you might find us coming out on another day in the week or something like that. I'm determined. This has been one of the greatest experiences of my life doing this show with Barry, with Lou, and previous Lou and Brian was the co-host, and all the great guests that we've had on here, and just sitting here and basically, like Barry said, being two idiots talking shit about movies and wrestling and television, music and life, and it's really everything that I've ever wanted to do. You know, when I was in college, my dream was to be a radio broadcaster, and that would have been great if I could just be a radio broadcaster. But you know, you had to study too, so that took a detour. But what's interesting about the lymphoma is, in fact, my father is a non-Hodgkin's lymphoma survivor. My dad, 91, but he is a non-Hodgkin's lymphoma survivor for 20 years, which I think is a very good sign. My mother and my sister are both breast cancer survivors. So it's very odd that here, 4 out of the 5 people in my family have all had some form of cancer. And me now being the last one, my brother, of course, I mentioned on last episode, just had a quadruple friggin' bypass, Barry.
I'm Gary. No, you can leave it. It's okay. I'm Gary. I'm and fine so, with that.
Yeah, my co-host Gary. So, yeah, but he Gary. Had the quadruple bypass and survived. He's already been placed in a rehab facility. And sent me a picture of his chest. This, oh my God, just jagged scar down the middle of his chest. It's horrible looking. But he's doing, apparently, according to everybody, he's doing really, really well. I'm happy about that. And so, so if you guys could work with us here on some of the timings, you know, God willing, Creek Don't Rise, we'll have our show out every week on Tuesday. Still, it kind of just depends, you know, if it's recording day and I wake up feeling like dog shit, then we'll have to maybe push it off a day or two, and we would appreciate your patience and dealing with that. So, okay, I think I did that, Barry. I had to get through that little speech.
I didn't know about your dad. I didn't know. And if I'm correct, too, I'm certainly not a doctor, but isn't non-Hodgkin's lymphoma is a really one of the more, they're all serious, but that's one that's,
and that is what I've been told, that the lymphoma generally, is one that can be treated much more easily than some of the other forms of cancer that you can get, you know, and I'm very happy about that. And, you know, other than, you know, this is something, you know, I had great fatigue. I had a lot of lethargy. First time we've ever used the word lethargy, I believe, by the way, Barry. And, you know, some other stuff was going on. But it was more like it started out just as a simple stomach ache. And, you know, my wife was in here yesterday and she said, you know, she goes, we should have had you checked out from the get-go. And thankfully, though, we're only talking about a matter of 3 or 4 weeks. It's not like I sat with this problem for 6 months and then went, okay, maybe I should get it checked out. You know, so we're hoping it's right at the very early stage. And so anyway, I appreciate anyone's kind thoughts towards me and what I'm dealing with. And, you know, I want to say that the people, not just my wife and my kids, have been great. You know, I've had friends. I've been very hesitant about reaching out and telling people about it. I certainly didn't want to put it on social media. The day this breaks, I'm going to announce it to all my friends on social media and let them know. The people that I've already, you know, told about it, like, you know, you and Lou, I didn't want to put it on Facebook and have somebody go, you know, like, what the fuck? You know, why didn't you tell me about it? No, and absolutely. It's because I wanted to get an idea of what I was dealing with before I put it out there. You know, you don't want to run into the theater and yell fire and, you know, that kind of thing. So, now, that being said, Barry, how are you feeling about Vince McMahon right now?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
That is what's called a transition, folks.
Yeah, that is a transition. And I got to admit, though, in comparison, I clearly could give two fucks about Vince McMahon. So in the scope of it, it's going to be hard for me to go on a rant right now when we're dealing with something as serious as what you're dealing with. But with that being said, the entire world at this point is stopping. And on a daily basis, literally every hour to 2 hours, something new is coming, whether it's a new closure or something. And the prediction is, if we're following the trends of what the world is doing and really what's taking place in our country, by the end of this week, all restaurants and bars will be closed, all movie theaters, people for the most part will be on some sort of a quarantine. But Vince McMahon, for whatever the reason, is not canceled WrestleMania. So let's talk about the fact that every major...
Absolutely. I'm sorry. Before we get into that, I just happened to, when you started talking, I went on Twitter and I read this and I think it's really interesting. The day we're recording this, the NFL ratified their agreement with the players union. Okay. And one of the things that was involved in that ratification was that the players' revenue share 48.8% with the owners. Okay. They get just slightly less than half. Okay. Which is an increase. So the person asked Dave, with that thing being ratified, is there any way that the WWE talent could compare to that number eventually in revenue sharing? Which, first, let's all be honest, kind of snickered when I saw that suggestion, because you and I both know that's never fucking happening. Barry, Dave responded with an answer. What would you think is the revenue sharing percentage for the WWE quote unquote talent for all the revenue sharing? What do you think their percentage is?
Oh, it's minuscule. I don't know. I just know it's got to be
8%. 8% fucking percent. Yes.
Wow.
WWE talent is getting 8% according to Dave Meltzer in his recent tweet. I apologize for interrupting. Please continue.
Yeah. And I don't know if I can top that statement. So I can make every attempt to do it. But you know what? So I've been one of these people that I feel a lot of the Vince bashing at times it's unnecessary. In my opinion, obviously, it's unnecessary. It's unwarranted. Certainly he's guilty of some stuff. A lot of the other stuff is just the way that people actually operate their businesses. It's the way business is run. It's, you know, you want to be the best at what you do, and competition is always going to be a thorn in your side. But, you know, Coke isn't going to embrace Pepsi, and McDonald's isn't going to embrace Burger King. Vince McMahon is going, he's a ruthless businessman. And I get that. And he's not the only one that's out there that's like that. But this whole thing of not canceling WrestleMania is a legitimate slap in the face to everybody that is not only a WWE fan, but to the people that save their money for a year or multiple years to go to a WrestleMania. And it's not easy to go. You know, if you look, Jeff, at what the cost is, the average ticket of WrestleMania, it's $200 to $300. A flight to WrestleMania, depending on where you're coming from, $200 to $300. The average cost of a hotel, $200. So you're looking at potentially thousands of dollars that you've got to save. And look, I'm sure there's going to be doctors and lawyers, but at the same time, there's a lot of people that may earn $10 or $15 per hour. So they are saving and scrimping up their money. In this past week, we have seen Disney World, in an unprecedented situation, is shutting down their theme parks in the U.S., which is California and Florida, for 15 days. It's the 15th. I believe today is the last day, and it won't open up until April. And that's a scheduled opening in April. That certainly may not happen. Movie theaters across the country are closed. We just talked about restaurants, schools, the NBA, the season is over. The NHL, the season is over. March Madness. It's just all the entire world, Jeff. You know, you look at what's going on in Spain and Italy, which are two countries that have just been devastated by this. The world has stopped because of coronavirus. And I'm not making that. This is not about making the judgment on right or wrong in that case, because I think one of the things that's been infuriating me is getting on social media and seeing all the experts, you know, experts with third grade educations telling us that this is all a hoax and all that other shit, which is really dangerous, in my opinion. We have no fucking idea what we're dealing with this coronavirus. And anybody that tries to tell you different is completely full of shit. And let me go on the record to say that. But for Vince McMahon, with WrestleMania, literally, what is it, 2 weeks from today, 3 weeks from today, literally right around the corner, not canceling this event when we know he's either going to be forced to cancel it or will cancel it voluntarily. And God knows he doesn't want to do that. To not do it is a slap in the face to a lot of people, to everybody that has saved their money, to everybody that can now start making plans to hold on and to do this, waiting for the city. And if you looked at the last statement, he completely did a baby face type of deal with this. We plan on running, I forget exactly, and I'm going to paraphrase, but we plan on running WrestleMania 36 on April the 4th or 5th, whatever the fucking date is, unless the government officials shut us down. Like, you know, yeah, that's it. The government officials are going to single you out, you arrogant motherfucker, and they're going to shut you down. Honestly, I've defended him because I felt at times that people were on him, you know, and I know he did a lot of sleazy scumbag shit, you know, and I am going to break kayfabe for a moment and tell you something, but this is just deplorable, his actions. So I haven't discussed this, Jeff, and I think I talked about this to you privately, but I did attend the funeral of Rocky Johnson a couple of months ago. And I think it's literally been about 2 months. And I didn't want to bring it up, and I'm not really going to go into great details, but it was a very small funeral, and Vince McMahon was there. And they had a program prior to the funeral beginning that was telling you, was listing everyone who was going to be doing speaking. And Vince was not listed up there. So out of nowhere, this is probably midway through the service, Vince McMahon comes walking down the aisle, and he's, I don't want to say he's doing the full out Vince walk, that exaggerated walk, but he was doing a slightly exaggerated walk is my guess. And he walks up on stage, and he's got the Vince McMahon smile on his face. It's this arrogant motherfucking smile on his face. And he says literally 30 words and walks off stage. And what he said was, the greatest thing Rocky Johnson ever did was to marry this woman, Atta, who was his ex-wife, not his current wife, and to have children. And he only had one child with Atta, who obviously is The Rock. It's Dwayne Johnson. He then got off stage, did his swagger, and went off stage. And it was very confusing to see it because people were left a little stunned by what just happened. Was it meant as a dig to Rocky at his own funeral? Was it meant a dig to the current wife? Or was it blowing smoke up the ass of Atta Johnson and The Rock, who were both there, obviously, being that it was her ex-husband and The Rock's father? And that's kind of what I think it was. But it was so inappropriate and so out of place at this funeral. And I just sat there and I watched. His son was there. Shane was there. I don't know if Stephanie was there. And I watched the faces of people. And there was maybe 100 people there, maybe 110 max. And I looked over just to see what the reaction was. And people just had a look on their face like, what the fuck is he doing? So I honestly think this is really irresponsible of him not to cancel WrestleMania. I get it when I see people on social media saying things like, boy, I hope they really don't cancel WrestleMania. I'm so looking forward to it this year. You know, there's, I can go on about that forever as well. But sometimes ignorance is bliss. And more power to those people if that's what they want to think. But Vince is not a dumb guy. Vince is a bright guy, but Vince has never shown any sort of anything to his buying audience. It's always been about him. It's always been about the company. It's always been about the money. And anytime he's ever made a statement which talks about, you know, we're doing this for the good of our fans, the most important thing is the health of our talent and the health of our fans. Well, that really isn't true. You know, a lot of people have been pointing this past week to the death of Owen Hart. And I'll tell you what my thoughts, and then I'll tell you what somebody said about that as well. But Owen Hart fell from the sky and died in the ring as he hit the ring. He was unconscious. I believe he was taken to a hospital and he died. And they still didn't stop the pay-per-view. And they didn't. And, you know, somebody pointed out
what Owen would have wanted. That's what
that's
said.
That is the biggest fist up your anus that you could ever say to someone when, you know what I mean? That there is zero credibility in a statement like that when you would claim that's what Owen would have. Doesn't matter. It should have nothing to do with it. What should have happened is he didn't want to deal with all the headaches. He didn't want to deal with the loss of revenue and everything that that was going to create. And somebody said on social media, like, this is okay. Well, Owen didn't die in the ring. Owen died, I believe, on the way to the hospital. But that's about as fucking moronic as a statement as you could possibly make.
Here's something I just thought of. No right or wrong answer. Just tell me your thoughts.
Sure.
On one of the pay-per-views, Shane McMahon, well known for doing those, you know, dives from the top of partitions and giant TV screens. Something goes wrong. Shane McMahon dies in the fall. Does Vince stop the show?
You know, there's no answer to that one, Jeff. Exactly.
Just something popped into my head. So
I'm going to say Vince dies in the ring. I'm sorry. Shane dies in the ring. He does stop the show. Let me go back slightly too. I think in hindsight, the backlash for Vince not stopping that pay-per-view was so great that he now would have stopped the pay-per-view with Owen's injuries. But to hear people say like this is some sort of checkmark justification Owen didn't die in the ring. He died on the way to the hospital or at the hospital. He didn't die. Oh my God. His injuries were clearly going to be fatal injuries in the ring when you saw him. That is the most moronic statement of all time by Vince not postponing WrestleMania and not being honest with the fans, not being honest with the people. This is a publicly traded company. It is another massive slap in the face.
So, you know what, again, as you were just saying that, here's what I thought of. For years and years, there was a belief, it was like one of those underground things that they wouldn't actually admit in a press conference or something like that, that at the Disney World, I'm not sure at Disneyland, but at the Disney World theme park in Orlando, no one ever died on the property. You know why?
Yes, I know why.
because well, since you work at Universal, you got no problem trashing them. Because they would take them and move them off the property.
Well,
and then have a doctor pronounce them dead. So they never died in the Magic Kingdom.
And that's very accurate. And to make this even muddle this up for you a little bit more. So they've got their own healthcare system or whatever it is. It's something called the Reedy Creek Improvement District, which is essentially a city within Disney World. And it's right outside. It's where the like Pleasure Island, it's right out. It's called Reedy Creek. And they will actually, they're the first responders. So it isn't like somebody's coming from one of the major hospitals in Orlando. They're coming from Reedy Creek. They take them, they bring them outside where they're then met by an ambulance taking them to a regular hospital or something. So yeah, so nobody, you're 100% correct, Jeff. Nobody dies Nobody dies on Disney property, and it's and they don't have to even, so the same way if you were to go to a fair or carnival in Orlando, that this is regulated by the state and these rides have to be inspected. Disney employs their own team to inspect the rides. They're not governed by the state.
Wow. So let me tell you what I think about this. Vince McMahon, from a monetary standpoint, is the greatest wrestling promoter of all time. Okay. From the rest of it, he's a ruthless fucking profiteer. And I put that on there. I said, there is no way I see this guy doing it on his own. He's going to be forced by the county, the state, whatever it may be. And then it's going to be like, then he'll be able to tell his fans, it wasn't us. You know, we didn't want to really. But this guy has, for all the scuzzy, scummy shit he's done over the last, 35, 40 years, Barry. Every time you don't think he can get any lower, he gets lower, you know? And, you know, I wonder, you know, the thing that affected the NBA and forced their hand into action is that Rudy Gobert for the Utah Jazz contracted the virus. So what happens? What if we look at the news one day? Oh, Roman Reigns has been, has contracted the virus. Roman Reigns or Kevin Owens, one of their big deal guys, or God forbid, Triple H. Does he take action then? Does that force his hand? Because now one of his, they don't call them wrestlers anymore, Barry. WWE talent has contracted the virus, and that's going to force him to go into it. Is that going to be what it is? It forces his hand, or is it going to be the city or the county?
It'll be the city or the county, because there's no way they're going to let this take place. And the fact that the city, let's talk about that for a minute. So the fact that the city hasn't shut this down, knowing that, so take out Europe, which at this point, Europeans are not coming over. But take out that people from all over the United States supposedly are going to be descending upon the city of Tampa and coming to an event. And it's 80,000 people.
In the state of Florida, where, by the way, it has been declared an epidemic throughout the state.
So, yeah.
All you 80,000 people coming from out of state, just remember that.
So it's ridiculous. At this point, there's no way WrestleMania will be taken. But so let's get back to the city commissioner, the mayor, whoever else is involved. Why haven't they shut this down? And everything that I've read is they're letting Vince handle this because they want him to cancel the event. But I guess they've gone on record saying that if Vince doesn't, then they're prepared to step in and shut this down. So you can hold him responsible and say, but at the same time, what are you waiting for? Go ahead and shut the fucking thing down already.
It's a game of chicken, because I think there are, I mean, and this is pretty obvious, large financial things in play here with, you know, refunds and everything else. And let's talk about this, the collateral damage, because there are certainly a number of wrestling shows that are going to be in that area for that weekend. certain amount of I think there's a fan fest in Tampa, isn't there, Barry? You know, where that will, you know,
one scheduled, that's for sure.
So no, but I mean, from a financial point of view, Cash Money Dave Pinzer and Lord Barron's here, they're gonna, you know, if it's canceled, they have to start dealing with, you know, whether or not they're gonna return money or schedule an event sometime in the future and then, you know, use those tickets for that. You know, there's all kinds of things in play. There's a lot of fucking money in play here. And I think the county and Vince are playing a game of chicken to see who, you know, or whatever you call it, let's see who blinks first. Let's see who caves in, see who turns out to be the good guy. Because you know that Vince wants to be the baby face in all this.
And that's what it is. He's trying to save face and he's trying to be, and it's so ridiculous. At this time, this is not what it's about. And yes, so to touch on that, we have five events planned during WrestleMania weekend, three events in the old Fort Homer Hesterly Armory. And then we've got a private dinner with Kevin Sullivan and a private dinner with Abdullah. I am certain later on in this week that we're going to be canceling these events. Let me, as much as I don't want to have to say that, it's logically the only route that we can go right now. So we will be issuing refunds. They will go through Wrestle Expo, which is etix.com, which is the group that we were going to be running with. I got to say that Cash Money, Dave Pinzer, and myself, apparently up to 6 million downloads per week for his podcast now, Jeff. We are going to be looking at doing an event when the world gets back to normal. I don't know if that is in 3 months or in 3 years, so I'm not going to put a date on it. But at some point, we would love to do another event, and we would love to get some of the talent that we had. You know, we had some real great things lined up for this one and get back and be able to present this. But until we know, we're just going to go on hiatus. There's nothing else we can do. But the most important thing is, look, this is a responsibility you have when you run a business. There's good and bad to it. Vince McMahon has no trouble taking your money when things are great. If things are fucked up now as they are, he has every single responsibility in refunding that money to you. But of course he won't. That's why he's trying to delay this as long as possible and trying to maybe get, you know, this move to Saudi Arabia where you could go and watch it, which obviously none of us could. So again, this is another slap in the face of his public. And the truth is the majority of his public is completely blissfully unaware that they're being anally fucked once again, and they're just going to go with it.
So, you know, the thing I'm sitting here thinking is I have a real problem seeing, okay, let's just say Bob from down the street was going to WrestleMania, and let's just say, like you said, $200-$300 for the ticket, okay?
Yes.
I have a real problem seeing that guy, Bob, that lives down the street, getting a check from the WWE for $200 or $300. No, what Bob's going to get is, how about we offer you next 5 years, WWE, you know, the streaming service, the network, or how about next time we're in town, you get a free ticket, you know, or he's going to do some kind of fucking bargaining shit to keep from handing people back cash.
He is. He absolutely is. And look, I also, to some degree, I understand that a bit because you're talking about millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars. But at the same time, this company is, you know, it's founded on the support of fans. This is not, you know, WWE is not a necessity to live. It's an entertainment vehicle and it's founded. But again, I go and I read a lot of these comments on Facebook and my God, social media is a barometer of what's going on in this world currently. It's frightening. I literally want to hide myself in the basement. But a lot of these people there, you know, there are people going, I've saved all year to go to this. I really hope it's not canceled. My daughter's going to be really upset if it is canceled. You know, how many people have died in Italy? Is it like 2,000 now? I know that it's like some crazy. Yeah. Exactly. Like, what the fuck? You know, I just, for the life of me, I don't get this. I don't understand it. I don't get it. People are just completely fucking clueless. But again, and this goes back to our early episodes, Jeff, if you take the ass fucking on a daily basis, I guess you become immune to it. And I guess you're fine with it.
Just for the record, I did not believe that Barry and I do take ass fuckings on a daily basis.
Not on a daily basis. No, we don't.
A weekly, monthly, maybe. Okay.
Special occasions only, yeah. But kind of like
it's my birthday. Woo.
But yeah, but that's what it comes down to. And it's almost like people are now completely immune to it. You can abuse them. You can treat them like shit, even though they're your paying customers. and you know they're going to do it, they're fine. And if history shows you that's the way it is, why would you stop? That's exactly what's happening.
Okay, so now it's time for us to get to our match of the week, folks, which I probably should have mentioned at the beginning of the show, but I, of course, am not doing the best thing. 1,441 deaths in Italy, Bear.
Wow.
Yeah. So our match of the week, we are going to, I believe, November 20th, 1994. We are returning to the rings of All Japan Women. We haven't done the women lately, Barry, and I wanted to get in and take a look at them. We are talking Aja Kong versus Manami Toyota. So right off the top of your head, Barry, give me your top five women wrestlers of all time.
Top five women wrestlers of all time. Hikaru Hakudo.
By the way, this is where Chulminski is out there, and he's thinking of some girl that works in like a promotion that has 100 fans show up on a monthly basis, and he's going, oh, you got to include her. That's a little shot at you.
Chigusa, that is a little shot. I would say Chigusa, Hakuda. I don't want to make this strictly Japanese. Let's be honest. I mean, the Japanese are far and away, but how about this? Who are the greatest non-Japanese women wrestlers of all time?
I would say Joyce Grable. Will say, how did I forget her name? I'm Facebook friends with her. She was one of the glamour gals.
Judy Martin.
Judy Martin. Judy Martin was very good. And so was Leilani Kai. Who else I could say?
Would you include any of the current generation in there? Doesn't sound like you are.
No.
Okay.
No.
And see, I
Debbie Malenko was good. And Medusa. Medusa was good.
Medusa was good. I got to tell you, I think that there are some spectacular female wrestlers that are currently out there. I'm a huge Charlotte Flair fan. A lot of people don't actually know that. And I know that she takes some heat, you know, based off of who her father is. I think she's tremendous. I do like Rhea Ripley a lot. If we're going to the old school, I would agree Judy Martin, Leilani Kai were at a different level.
Yeah, the Glamour Girls were a really good tag team. You know, the fact that they stayed in the ring with the Jumping Bomb Angels. And, you know, to be honest with you, it was a notch below their prime Jumping Bomb Angels. But they were still really good. And those four had some really, really good matches.
They absolutely did, too. There was some real good stuff there. And I had lunch with, about a year ago, right? A year and a half ago, I had lunch with them. And Leilani Kai and Judy Martin couldn't have been any nicer. Just two.
Leilani at one of the fan fests.
Leilani at one of the fan fests, and I'm actually in contact. I like Leilani a lot. We're in contact a lot, and probably you'll see her at a future fan fest as well. Joyce Grable, somebody too that you mentioned. I would love to get her down to a fan fest at some point. Big fan of Joyce Grable. Interesting too, when you stop and think about that, the Fabulous Moolah won't make anybody's list ever of one of the top female wrestlers of all time. Certainly did the most.
I would say personalities. I would put Moolah on a list. You know, she had a huge personality, but in the ring work, no.
No, it's something about Moolah, too. Take out what we know about Moolah now, whether it's alleged or not alleged. But, you know, I remember watching a lot of the Moolah matches in the 1980s when she would start to do that bridge and you would get that crusty beaver shot. Do you remember?
She would probably is the first time we ever used the term crusty beaver shot on the show.
But do you remember that? She would do the bridge and she would spread her legs and I would be like, fuck, I don't want to see like a 90-year-old woman's crusty beaver. Please don't do that to me. But not a great wrestler. Wendy Richter was good. I don't know if
I'll agree with you. I don't think she was great, but she was
good. I wouldn't put her. I would say, so I think you're out of the gate. I think the three names you were right. Joyce Grable, Leilani Kai, and Judy Martin for old school. I would go with that.
So here's the other thing that's kind of funny. And as I searched my memory bank, so I didn't look completely stupid like usual, the Jumping Bomb Angels were Norio Tatano and Itsuki Yamazaki. Wow, I pulled that completely out of my ass, by the way.
Pretty good.
But the thing is, they had those great matches. And much like our wrestling hero, I think I could say that for both of us, Jack Briscoe smoked like chimneys, both of them. And they would go out and have these fantastic matches. And, you know, right before their match, they're sick and puffing a whole pack of ciggies away. And right afterwards, too. And it's amazing that they had that kind of wind and that kind of oxygen after they're, you know, smoking a butt. And it's just amazing. So for mine, I would say the non-American, since I think the Japanese women are vastly superior. I think Manami Toyota is probably the best wrestler of all time. Chigusa Nagoya is my favorite, you know, women's wrestler of all time, just because I love her personality. Also had great matches. I put her in the top five. Akira Hokuda is definite. Why do I draw blanks at the worst possible? Bull Nakano, that's who I'm thinking of. Bull was a great wrestler and a great character at a time when they really lacking. There was about a 3-year period where after Chigusa retired and some of the other ones retired, where there was a real dearth. And for the fifth one, I'd say Jaguar Yokota. She was the Babe Ruth of Japanese women's wrestling. She put Japanese women's wrestling on the match.
Yes.
On like in the late 70s until about 1985 when she retired. And then Chigusa took the reign from her. But without Jaguar Yokota, Japanese women's wrestling never really reaches the heights that it would in the 80s and into the 90s. So you ready to get to the match, Bear?
I guess. I don't know. Yeah.
So here's the thing. And I think as we talked before, and Barry was not as enthusiastic about this, but he didn't think it was a bad match, correct?
Oh, no, not at all. It's not a bad match.
So it was rated a 5-star match by Dave Meltzer, okay? It took place on the 20th of November, 1994, and it took place in the Tokyo Dome. Now, in this case, and I believe it was like Wrestle Marine Pad, which I to be honest with you, the translation of that is lost to me, because Wrestle Marine, it was like that, their version of calling it WrestleMania or Starcade. They call it Wrestle Marine Pad, and I don't know if this is one or two. But it was held at the Tokyo Dome. They had a real good crowd because everything that was going on in promotion at that point was still really hot. But Tokyo Dome shows, sometimes there is, you do a move and the pop from the crowd doesn't hit the ring till like about 4 seconds later because of the different noise levels and stuff like that. So a lot of times it's better to watch a card in a venue like Corken Hall or, you know, a smaller venue and you know, like even like the Budokan or the Sumo Hall that held, I think the Sumo Hall was about 11,500. Budokan might've been about 15,000, but still enough where you're getting that visceral reaction. You know, Korakuen Hall is the most amazing building I've ever been in. And I went to ECW's arena too, but this was a facility where the fans absolutely rabid there. And it's fantastic to see a match there. So this match takes place. It's the main event of the evening. You have Aja Kong versus Manami Toyota. Aja Kong, in my belief, is one of the great monster heels in Japan, Japanese women's wrestling, perhaps only behind Dump Matsumoto and Bull Nakano, but she was, and she's probably equal with Bull because she's really good. And I know that's one of the things that the American promotions with AEW and with NXT and stuff, you know, they have to create a monster. And because then there's something that the other wrestlers have to overcome. That's really solid, you know, wrestling booking. So Aja Kong was created. Her real name, Barry, here's another one coming right out of my ass, Erika Shishido.
Right.
She was the daughter of, I believe, a black serviceman and a Japanese woman. So she had, I'm going to be honest, sort of an unusual look. You don't see a lot of Japanese women with afros. Okay. It was just a kind of a different look, but it was all part of what made her personality. And she, when she switched from being Erika Shishido, a prelim girl, to becoming Aja Kong, and that whole new personality came out of her. And that's just like what happened with Akira Hokuda, who went from being a prelim girl named Hisako Uno, there's another one I pulled out, Barry, and she became Akira Hokuda. She became a completely different wrestler. By the way, did you know that Akira Hokuda, in taking a pile driver, I believe, off the middle rope or the top rope, broke her neck? Did you know that, Barry?
During this match?
No.
Okay.
During another match, but she was wrestling as Akira Hokuda, I believe.
I'm sorry.
Maybe she hadn't become a kid. And so she took a pile driver off the middle, I think the middle or top rope, and she broke her neck and was out for a year. Came back, and you know, she became a main eventer. So that's an incredible story. But so anyway. So back to this match, you have the champion, who is Aja Kong, versus Manami Toyota. This is easily, Barry, you could say, a David and Goliath type of thing.
It is. It's which I think that's actually part of the charm of this match is that, and you've got Manami Toyota, who's a very attractive Japanese woman. She's not only a fantastic wrestler, but she's really great to look at as well. And then you've got Kong, and you know, literally, it's David Goliath. It's beauty versus the beast. But the matchup actually works. It was funny because when you said about breaking the neck, and then you said it was Akira Hokuda, but about breaking the neck off of either the middle or top rope, there is essentially a jumping pile driver. There's two jumping pile drivers in this match. And the first one that takes place, as I look at it, I go, oh my God, how is Toyota not in a wheelchair? Because, you know, Kong gets 4 feet in the air and just comes down and you just go, oh my God, this is so painful. So I like this match. I don't love it. Was this an Observer match of the year or it was right up? Right?
It was a 5-star match. It was probably one of the finalists, but I'm not sure it got the match of the year.
Yeah, so I think it's a great match. There's the work is solid. Two things I think that prevent it for me from going to the next level. One is there is, I don't want to say there's rest holds because that wouldn't be accurate, but in the middle of the match, there's a couple of periods where Kong has got Toyota kind of tied up in these torturous holds, and it just, everything seems to stop. So there just doesn't appear to be any fluidity. It just seems to stop as she's got her in these holds. The other aspect, and as you pointed out to me, the reasoning for it, and I'll let you elaborate on that, is there is a lack of heat from the crowd with this match. And I think that hurts. And when the ending comes, it's almost anticlimactic because, you know, it's an ending that occurs. You would think there would be screaming, there would be people jumping up and down, and possibly there are, we just don't hear it or see it. You know, it just seems like the match ends and that's it. And I think that actually hurts it. Toyota, though, she's right out of the gate. Toyota is revving her engines, Jeff, so to speak, to be really cliche.
I see what you did there. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. To be really corny and cliche-ish. But she strikes first with this drop kick, which sends Kong into the corner. And this is at the 640 mark, just to give you an idea. By the time all the introductions and everything is happening, we're almost 7 minutes into this before they finally touch each other. Kong is super, super stiff.
Not that there's anything wrong with them touching each other, but anyway.
No, we would actually encourage that. But Kong is very, very stiff too, which I actually like. I think that adds obviously to the match. Her kicks, you know, this is some 30 years before guys were putting stiff kicks in the U.S., which is now all the rage. And Daniel Bryan certainly made it very popular over the last decade. There is that slight lull in the middle that I do think kind of takes away from the match. But the highlight of this match for me, Jeff, and I don't know how the fuck to describe this, but Toyota is sitting on the top rope. Kong comes in. Toyota does some sort of a flip. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
How would you describe this?
Almost like a Canadian destroyer.
From like the top rope?
Yeah.
Is that okay? I've never seen anything ever like it. And that right there just makes this match, it puts it on a completely different level. I loved it. But this is, at the end of the day, this is a good match to me. It's hurt by a couple of things, which I probably have mentioned 10 times at this point. I like it. I just don't know if it's in that upper echelon. I will say, for the most part, I am in the minority with this because I went on to a couple of review sites and people are basically saying this might be the greatest women's match in the history of the promotion that's ever taken place. So I clearly am in the minority. I think it's a good match. I just don't love it as much as everybody else seems to.
I think, I don't know if it's the greatest match in Japanese women's history. I mean, it certainly would be up there. Some of their tag matches with Manami Toyota's partner, I believe Toshio Yamada, taking on some of the girls from the other promotions, who those names I draw a blank on, are supposed to be unbelievable. And, you know, some of the stuff with the Crush Girls taking on like Bull and Condor Saito in the later part of the 80s. To me, those were some outstanding matches. And, you know, because they were in Korakuen a lot of times, it was super, super heated. And that certainly added the matches. You know, the crowd reaction, I get that. They're in the Tokyo Dome and that plays a part. And, you know, the lack of crowd reaction in certain spots. So there's two spots in particular that I want to talk about. I really enjoyed this match. First of all, let me just say that if anyone out there is a fan of Mitsuharu Misawa, and you recall like some of the matches with him and Kenta Kobashi and different guys and Kawada, where he would take these back suplexes and literally land right on the top of his head. And you wonder how the hell this guy's neck doesn't break. In this match, there are spots like that where the women get dropped on their head and you're like, how the fuck are these women even breathing? Because it looks like a kill shot. And so anyway, the two spots I want to point out, there's a spot where Aja Kong picks up Manami Toyota for a full-on power slam, gives her the power slam. The referee gets in position to make the pin, and Aja Kong face right in front of that Manami Toyota beaver. She's literally breathing on it. And all I thought of was, oh, that's a pretty lucky spot for Aja Kong to pick right there. Barry, remember that spot? Because you talked about, you know, Fabulous Moolah with her crusty crotch.
Crusty old
beaver.
Not a
crusty. Yeah, this is in her prime, sweet-ass Manami Toyota, and who could basically have had fucking modeled for one of the dirty magazines. I mean, she was hot. And then the other thing is there's a spot where Aja Kong is thrown out of the ring and Manami Toyota gets on the top rope and she kind of jumps up to the top rope. It's all one fluid motion. And she jumps down and catches her with a full drop kick to the top of the chest and then falls back onto the mat. And it was just like, holy shit, how did she not kill herself? That's, you know, I mean, I know we, you know, the high spots of all the different guys now that do that, you know, we're used to guys doing crazy spots. But to me, this was, you know, I don't see Charlotte Flair doing that move. I'm sorry. You know, I'm not poo-pooing Charlotte Flair. I'm just saying, you know, that is an example to me of the difference that 20 years makes or 25 years makes in the moves that these Japanese women are doing. I always tell people they're so far fucking ahead of time. You know, they're doing stuff that even today, the USA women have not caught up with. And that's the chief problem I have with that. You know, if there ever comes a time, whether it be 5 years, 10 years from now, where they're doing stuff and I go, oh yeah, I remember Chigusa or Manami Toyota doing that stuff. Yeah, they're dated to really a good job on the execution of that move. That's when I'll start accepting the American women for being in a place where the Japanese women once were. So I thought this was a really good, you know, some of the impactful spot moves, the stuff off the top rope. And then, you know, the ending is that, spoiler alert from 25 years ago, is that Aja retains her crown. And as someone, you know, I was reading a review and someone I thought put in, this is David versus Goliath, but Goliath wins. But still, we'll post this video to our Facebook page, Breaking KFA with Badger and Barry. And, you know, I'm interested to see what people think of it. How does this compare? And I know, don't give me the fucking bullshit about, I don't like listening to the Japanese announcers. You know, fucking turn the mute button on or something. And just watch the moves. You know, watch the drop kick off the top rope. Watch the fucking Canadian destroyer that Barry was describing. You know, watch the back suplexes where they land on their head like Misawa did. This is the kind of match you sit there and think, these ladies had to take a couple of years off their own life there, you know, with some of the moves that they're accepting and they're willing to let their person, you know, because of course, when you give your body to your opponent and, you know, they're going to do a crazy move like that, there's a lot of trust involved there. And, you know, they got to know how, you know, when they're dropping you on your head, not to drop you on your head, but to make a move look legitimate and not literally kill you in the ring as you could have. So that being said, Barry.
To your point, and you're right about what you're saying, where the women wrestlers currently in the WWE can't compare to what they're doing. But at the same time, you look at the injuries that occurred with a lot of these women. Sure, there's no way that with a publicly traded company, they're going to let some of these women take these maneuvers. You know, somebody would die in ring at the end of the day because it's absolutely incredible.
That's absolutely fair point. So swig of Gatorade for the working man because my electrolytes are completely out of whack. So now it's time to go to the segment of our show that has caused the most reaction and the most arguments on our page. It's classic rock time again, Barry.
Ugh.
So as we left you last week at number 500 with Lynyrd Skynyrd, what's your name? And then as we were signing off, I said, holy shit, Lou Reed, Walk on the Wild Side, Fortnite. Barry, how is Lou Reed this low on the list? That's such an iconic song.
Yeah, who doesn't know the song, right? Everybody knows this song. How can it be as low as it possibly is?
Wendy went down to South FLA or took the train from, or bus from South FLA, hitchhiked her way along the way. Yeah, so great song that I fucking just butchered the lyrics to, I'm sure. So let's say as we go on. Okay, so here's, I'm going to make an argument on something. Number 497 is the Rolling Stones, As Tears Go By. As Tears Go By is a really good song.
Yes.
But it's also a song that came out about 1964, 65, 66, like a really old Rolling Stones song. I'm pretty much guessing that they don't play that live in concert that much anymore. But why I'm bringing this up, I'm glad to see they're including stuff from the 60s, but does that not open up the gate to, okay, I'm going to put this out there and I'm going to have a few people that are going to completely shit their pants, just like I did a week ago. Well, that wasn't completely. Should Elvis Presley be on this list, Barry? Somewhere, anywhere.
Yeah, I could care less about Elvis for the most part, but yeah, if we're going to call it as it is, if you've got, you know, if you've got the Moody Blues on, the story in your eyes, or you've got Billy Joel. I mean, I know he's rock and roll, but he, you know, and I love Billy Joel. I don't want to upset, you know, the people who love him because I know we've got them. But yeah, of course. How could Elvis not be on this list, Jeff?
You know, I know they didn't want to go back to the 50s, but, you know, Elvis had hit records in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah,
too, before he died.
Exactly.
And, you know, it's a very subjective list. You know, we talked about Cat Stevens being on there, Simon and Garfunkel. And to me, rather than Simon and Garfunkel or Cat friggin' Stevens, how do you not slip in just one or two Elvis, you know, songs?
Boy, you don't like Cat Stevens.
That were, you know, I don't have any. I actually think that's a good song, but it doesn't belong on a classic rock list, you know?
Yeah, it doesn't.
And, so, and of course, you know.
Yeah. So 490, Jeff, Phil Collins, Take Me Home, which is not a song I ever think of when I think of rock and roll, but it only beats out 489 Dio, Rainbow in the Dark, which is a kick fucking ass rock and roll song.
I agree.
Pretenders, Brass in Pocket.
Don't be jumping ahead. I got a couple things. So we got at 494. Crosby, Stills, and Nash, just a song before I go. The reason I want to bring this up, good song. I happen to have watched recently, I believe it might have been on Showtime. There is a new documentary about David Crosby, and it's on there. And, of course, I'm drawing a blank on the name of it that it'll pop into my mind as I'm talking. It is really, really well done. If anyone gets a chance to watch it, it came out in 2019. And it's funny because I don't really like any David Crosby solo stuff. You know, I like some Neil Young. I like Stephen Stills and Graham Nash. But David Crosby, and one of the things that they mentioned, he was the only one in the group never to have a solo hit record. But anyway, he talks about his life, had a real problem with his dad, which seems to be a theme of a lot of rock, rock guys. Does. But he went through all the way up to, Woodstock and, Kent State, and all the way up to he went into prison at some point, I think during the 90s, and then coming out of it. And, he and his wife were able to reconnect. They were, I think, living together before he went into prison, and they had to get a judge's permission to get married because, one of the principles of AA is that, if you need to change people's places and things, and so you shouldn't, be involved with someone from your past. So he got permission from this judge to allow the judge, for the judge to allow them to get married. So, but what ended up happening, and I didn't know this at this point, was none of the guys in the band will talk to David Crosby. None of them will have anything to do with him. And he's now probably 77 years old, I guess, around this time frame. And he's looking back. And one of the interesting points that he made as he was looking back at, some of the wrong decisions that he's made, some of the things he talks about how horrible he was to women in the past, is he said, in the end, when you look back on your life as you get older, the ultimate commodity is time. Money's not that important anymore. Time is important when you reach my age, which I thought was a pretty profound statement and pretty interesting. So if you're a fan of all of Crosby, Stills, and Nash, I really encourage you to seek it out. David Crosby, I'm still not thinking of it. I'll look it up when I get a chance. And, I really encourage you to seek it out because it's interesting. I know my friend Greg Good is, a big CSNY fan, and I told him about it. So anybody that's ever been touched by Crosby, Stills, and Nash's music, that's a real good documentary to search out. I think it's like an hour and 15 minutes, something like that. Okay, now let's go back where you were. Brass in Pocket at 487.
Yeah, but again, if I'm going to pick up Pretender songs, I'm going to go Brass in Pocket. Jeff, as I see the Beatles here too, we skip by Lady Madonna, which was 495 by the Beatles. I caught a film on television the other night that I had never seen called Yesterday.
I happened to watch that about 3 days ago. What'd you
think
of it?
I loved it. Wasn't it great?
It was really, can I ask and guess what your favorite scene was from the movie? When he goes to the beach.
Well, yeah. Okay. Yeah, sure. I always like when they're at the beach, but I liked the guy a lot. This guy was great, wasn't he?
The acting was stellar. A lot of people I did not know, but there is in this one, because it's a new movie, I'm not going to spoil it. The guy, the plot of the movie, for those who haven't heard about it, is this guy wakes up in a world where no one knows who the Beatles are. He's Googling it. He's looking on all these internet websites, and he can't find anything saying that the Beatles ever existed. And so what he does is he's a struggling musician, kind of, plays in a bar kind of thing. And he starts writing down Beatles songs. And Ed Sheeran sees him in a bar one night and says, I really like the way you play. Maybe you can come open some of my shows. And, Ed Sheeran is a huge, huge musical act right now. And he said, yeah, sure, I'd love to do that. And as he starts playing the songs while he's opening up, he's playing stuff like Here Comes the Sun and, and all these songs. And people are like, what the fuck is it? Man, these songs are brilliant. And Ed Sheeran at one point sits there and says, I'm not sure that I shouldn't be opening for you because your songs are so unbelievable. And so what happens is he's confronted by these two people one night, an older man, an older woman. And they said, we just want you to know there are people out there that remember, and we remember them. And so he, has this enlightenment, a moment of clarity. And he goes out one night and he says, I want to say that I did not write these songs. These songs were written by John Lennon, Paul McCartney, Ringo Starr, and George Harrison. And they should be the ones that are giving credit. Okay. So now he's admitted this. And so now he becomes like this national disgrace. And so the man and the woman, the older man and woman that I mentioned briefly, come to see him. And they said, there's something we need you to know. And he says, okay. He goes, and they hand him a slip of paper. They said, you need to go to this address. So he goes to the address. And I will just say that he runs into someone. And when the door is open and that person is revealed to him, boy, it's a scene, Barry, that you talk about, just you really kind of tugs the heartstrings, lump in the throat kind of stuff. It's is it like an Academy Award winning great, great film? No. But, if you're looking for a way to kill, 2 hours, you could be a lot worse. This is a really fun movie, great music, and worth seeking out. And it's called Yesterday. Okay, Barry, let's get back here. 481, Kiss, Detroit Rock City. That's a great fucking rock song. It was a pretty good movie. You saw the movie?
I did. I liked the movie a lot.
Furlong? Yeah, that was a good movie.
That's a fun movie. Yeah.
So let's move it. 477, Telephone Line is my favorite ELO song. This is blasphemy here. That's all I'm going to say. Let's see. 471, Van Halen, Dance the Night Away. Barry, that was my wedding song, or my daughter's father-daughter dance. That was our song. You know, I put on a little VH here for the people. 468, Bruce Springsteen, Hungry Heart. That's a monster hit. It's got to be higher than that.
Oh, God, yeah. But, you know, you start going through all of this, too. 465, we just talked about the Beatles. I Feel Fine. 464, Talking Heads, And She Was. But then you get down, 472, Aqualung. Whether you like Jethro Tull or don't like Jethro Tull is probably irrelevant. That song, Aqualung, is iconic, and it represents, I think, a period of rock and roll in the 1970s.
Yeah, and let's see what else we got here. I believe you mentioned this last week, 462, Robert Plant, In the Mood.
Yes.
461, Grand Funk, Closer to Home, I'm Your Captain. 460, Bowie, Changes. Come on. Let's see, 454, Petty, The Waiting. Just an iconic Petty song. And by the way, one number below, Saturday in the Park by Chicago.
That's what I was going to say. Again, right. God bless Chicago. But Saturday in the Park is in the top 500 rock songs of all time. Fuck.
Yeah. 449, Patti Smyth and Scandal, The Warrior. Really? Really? Right. That, you know, that's a good pop song. I don't know if that's a classic rock song. I am the warrior. Very John McEnroe. Song.
That's right.
They're still married, aren't they?
Still married, which is like some 30, 40 years at this point.
Yeah, yeah. So who would have figured?
Yeah.
Let's see. 442, Rolling Stones, Beast of Burden. 440, Black Sabbath. Black Sabbath, you know, iconic rock song. But and one of the songs that really, you know, I know it wasn't the first technical heavy metal song, but that's one of the songs that's very near the top of songs that totally begot the heavy metal sound, you know. 433, Thin Lizzy, Boys Are Back in Town. Fucking, you know.
What? Wow. Yeah, P.S. Hayes is upset right now. Purely sexy. He's purely pissed.
Purely sexy. You know, look, I just want to go out with you. I'm not going to tell my wife or anything.
Right.
Did you remember that line?
Oh, yes, I do. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Iconic song, Foreigner, Jukebox Hero. Like, that's on like rotation pretty much every day for any classic rock station in your area. Okay. Here's one. 427, I'm going to mention because. Barry, what do you like Steely Dan?
Yeah, I like him. Your wife hates him, right?
Yeah, she absolutely.
I know it. Yeah.
427, my favorite Steely Dan song, Dirty Work. 419, that fucking Jack and Diane song. Ugh. That got so overplayed, I just, you know. Okay, Barry, here's one for you. The Fix. Would you consider The Fix a new wave? Because I know you, we had a conversation about that. Okay,
and I one love thing leads song. To another.
Yeah, it's a good song.
Oh, but it's new wave.
Okay, so Houses of the Holy by Zeppelin is 415. 414, America, a horse with no name.
So I think what we can say with this lit, which again, this is so infuriating. There's no continuity whatsoever. No,
not at all.
With this list. Yes.
Let's see. 408, The Doors, The End. One of the great songs in a movie ever. In Apocalypse Now, when they start playing The End, man, that is perfect. A perfect marriage between song and movie.
Jeff, 403. Shh, Jeff, you got to stop because the song is playing right now.
Desperado, why don't you come to... Is it Terry Funk coming in the room?
Terry Funk, but I also... You know what I think of? I think of
Seinfeld. Oh, Seinfeld, of course. Yeah. And she wanted to do Witchy Woman. Witchy Woman. You can't do that. Okay, 402, special mention.
Is it Witchy Woman or Witchy Woman?
All right. 402. Rockman Tonight by Billy Squire. Now, was this the one with a video that ended his career?
This is it. This is it. He's wearing the pastel, like, modern pajamas, aerobics. Yeah, something. And he's dancing very alternative. Let's put it that way.
Is that what you're going to go with? Alternative? Okay.
Alternative. That's what I was going to go with.
Okay. 400, Bad Company. Bad Company. That's, oh, my God. Let's see. Bob Seger, 393, Against the Wind. That's my all-time favorite Seger song.
Yeah, this.
392, Van Halen, Jamie's Crying.
Right. That's probably be top 100, maybe.
And by the way, I did a little research. Occasionally I do that. And the numbers come out as I started checking to see who had the most songs on this list. And lo and behold, the boys from Pasadena, I don't know if it's the, you know, the number one amount of songs, but they came up with 25 songs out of the 1,000. So they basically got 2.5% of this entire list is Van Halen songs. So I think that's pretty. And by the way, just for those that care, Diamond Dave with more songs than Sammy.
Right. As always.
Okay, Bear, 391, Billy Idol, Rebel Yell. That's a pretty iconic song that I think is a little too low. Ozzy, 390, No More Tears. And Zep at 389, Babe, I'm Gonna Leave You.
Yeah, I don't know what to say.
But Witchy Woman is in front of all those songs.
Yeah, which is pretty crazy, too. But even, look, this is a nice song. And, of course, I just lost it right there. But number 374, Jeff. It's a nice song. I like this song. But is 38 Specials Caught Up in You really the 374th greatest rock and roll song of all time?
Well, it is in front of, let's see, Start Me Up by the Stones, Foreigner's Feels Like the First Time, and David Bowie's Fame.
It's in front of Fame. Yeah. I mean, really, it's in front of Fame.
It's in front of You Got Lucky by Petty. Also in here, again, randomly thrown against the wall, 383, The Romantics, What I Like About You.
Yeah.
That doesn't say, I don't hear that on the classic rock stations. I mean, it's a peppy, upbeat, you know, kind of new wavy pop song. But I don't see that as a classic rock song.
It's not. That's why. Yeah.
So, okay. 367, Mellencamp. I said I liked some of his earlier stuff. I Need a Lover. That's a good, solid classic rock song that apparently John Mellencamp.
That's when he was Cougar at that point, right?
It might have been Johnny Cougar then. Or, no, not Johnny Cougar. He was just regularly John Cougar. So Mellencamp shouldn't get credit for that. Let's see. Okay. Here's another one. It's a staple of classic rock radio. Cheap Trick 363, I Want You to Want Me. Recorded live at the Budokan, by the way. And the crowd is insane when they're playing that song.
Oh, yeah. That's a great song, too. That one I wouldn't argue about. Yeah, that Live at Budokan album, too. That was, I want to say I went through a couple of copies of that one when that came out. Cheap Trick at one point was probably my favorite band in the world.
Okay, so we'll wrap up this week at number 350, Neil Young, Heart of Gold. Great, great song.
That is a great song. Again, it's beating the Beatles at 351 with Drive My Car.
Cocaine by Eric Clapton.
Really?
I mean, 357. Fucking
359, Jeff. Free Will by Rush. Come on. Yeah.
So, by God, if Spirit of Radio is not number one, somebody's going to have some questions to be answered. All right, folks. Listen, we're going to wrap it up. We apologize. The show is a little bit shorter than usual. This is live from... Emory Johns Creek Hospital in Georgia. It's our first recording ever from a hospital, Bear.
So, Jeff, what have we? Let's go. Hospital, coronavirus, weddings, vacations.
Vince,
job changes, retirements, moved from one state to another.
Weddings.
Yeah, and we have never missed.
Graduations.
We have never missed an episode. You are in the hospital currently recording. That is your dedication to what we do. On that note, if you're listening to this right now and you haven't bought a copy of one of Jeff's books, hang your head in shame. He is in the hospital recording for you and doing this episode for you, and you haven't purchased one of his books. Hang your head. Yeah.
You know who you are.
Oh, yeah. We know.
Yeah. Because some of the, right now, some guy's going, oh, he's talking about somebody else. No, I'm talking to you, motherfucker.
That's it.
Okay. So for my producer, sweet Lou Kippelman, we are definitely appreciative of Lou and everything he does with the show. We can't express that. So
he's sexy. My co-host, Barry Rose. Love him. There's a sexiness factor to Lou, let alone the erotic porn voice that he gets going. But at the same time, just there's a general aura about Lou that it's just an overall sexiness, which we really do appreciate. And as a producer, I mean, we love being able to work with him.
Absolutely. So, and for my co-host Barry Rose, live from the hospital, this is your man, the Booker, and I hope to be back with you same time, same bat channel next week. We'll see how it goes. God willing, the creek don't rise. We'll talk to you next week, folks. Have a good one.
Hi, it's Lou again to remind you that Breaking Kayfabe with Baldrin and Barry is a production of the Arcadian Vanguard Podcast Network. I also hope that you have some time in these crazy days to show a little love to Jeff on Twitter. His handle is @BaldrinJeff. I think it would mean a lot. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you next time.